All right, everybody, welcome to episode 30 of The Scoop. We're back this week and finally joined by Kyle Gauss. He's back from his two-week suspension, hiatus, break, whatever you want to call it. Kyle's back.
I was on the disabled
list. Okay, yeah, that's fair enough.
Do you remember when, like, Rick Vaughn comes back in Major League 2? Like, he finally, like, says, I'm going to throw heat again?
Oh, yeah, of course.
We're throwing heat again.
Is this when you strap on the leather vest jacket, and then you put the glasses on?
Take the contacts out, put the glasses back on. Dennis Quaid.
Give him the haircut.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
Randy Quaid's up in the stands. That's Pat Egan in this scenario.
Current Randy Quaid?
Randy Quaid
long
has
hair.
Some issues. He's got some issues.
Wait, so you during this time you ran away with that what was his girlfriend in Major League 2? Nikki? Nikki was the old girlfriend.
Yeah, the good girlfriend.
The good girlfriend. Well,
she wasn't even in the first one, right? They just put her in the second one and said, oh, he used to date this girl. No. Yeah. I ran away with the blonde.
Who was the agent.
Corporate shell, yeah.
Yeah.
Shill.
Okay.
Now I'm back.
Apparently you have some numbers for us.
So, my last podcast I appeared on aired on March 25th. Since then, the two episodes since with you three as the core of the scoop.
You three? Sounds like somebody's grandmother.
Yeah.
You three over there didn't finish
17.44% drop-off in listeners.
I'm a little bit disappointed. You're coming at two college students, right?
So I'm bringing the juice. Yeah, we're back. Like a phoenix risen from its ashes, the scoop is coming back.
That's a great way to describe it, I think. So what do you, since you're the first one back, what do you want to kick off the show with today?
Let's talk about some spring football. Talk about a Cherry and White game coming up.
Great.
Let's do it.
I like that. And Matt hasn't even said a word yet.
Matt,
how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's awesome, man. And you, John?
I can't say anything.
Say it. Are you doing awesome? I want to hear.
Am I doing awesome?
I'm doing awesome.
Doing okay.
You sound like a five-year-old kid asking his father a question. Are you doing awesome, Dad?
Well,
sorry, we're weeks behind on the Bills.
Tossing.
I'm week behind.
You know what? Is that a Houston Texans sweatshirt?
No, it's
Philadelphia Marathon.
Yeah. I knew that. I thought Texans too. It's the same colors.
Looks like a Texans.
It looks like half the horn. Like if you mirrored this,
maybe.
And came back up, yeah, I'd agree. But no, I knew it was Philadelphia Marathon.
And
side logo
with
like Bill O'Brien's running. Chin.
You don't run it anymore.
I'm back. I'm gonna be running Broad Street still. That's the goal.
Really?
Absolutely.
Isn't that 2 weeks?
2 weeks. That's the goal.
You're still
talking to your doctor about this?
No. It's gonna happen.
Meg ran Broad Street. No, Meg ran a half marathon. And I don't know if I should be telling this. With a sports hernia that the doctor specifically told her not to run with. My wife did it anyway.
And she's fine. She's alive.
She's fine. She's okay.
Her doctor listens to the scoop.
When it rains, she feels a little weird. Her joints kind of cramp.
I don't know if that happening since I'm only 22, but, you know, whatever. So why don't we kick off some spring football talk? Who wants to talk about it first?
I don't know. What do you guys feel like you need to see on Saturday? So it's an offense. Matt wrote this in his story on Saturday. It's just going to be an offense-defense format. Mm-hmm. So no. I don't know, cherry and white teams.
No draft.
Yeah, no draft. Offense, defense.
I need to see Khalif Urban have a breakout game.
Okay, are you serious?
No, I'm interested in the linebackers, right? I think that's kind of my big point of focus is whether it's a couple things, whether it's Avery Williams or Stephon Marshall kind of stepping up, seeing if they can match their leadership skills with the production on the field, or if it's somebody like Chappelle Russell or a Sean Bradley. Like, I think that's kind of the main storyline for me is – who's stepping up in the linebacker core? Does Jared Allman take that next step? He has a lot of talent. He was a highly recruited kid at high school. Can he be that productive of a linebacker, be an all-conference linebacker?
Why did you pick on Khalif Urban?
Because Khalif Urban, Myron Miles, they're all the same thing.
They flash in the spring.
And then they do nothing. John asks them a question. They come in a denim cut-off sleeve jacket. They answer
That's
very...
That's just Khalif Urban. I don't
they
think
answer
Myron
very,
Miles ever had a denim cutoff jacket.
I didn't check his wardrobe. No, they give good answers, and they're a good story at the time, and then by the time August comes around, nothing happens.
I don't know. Matt, what are you looking for?
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with the running backs. I know Jahad Thomas, Matt Rule said he's kind of banged up, but he hurt his rotator cuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it seems a little shaky whether or not
Throw
he'll play on Saturday.
A couple innings out of the bullpen.
but Thomas has been in and out of spring practice kind of the whole spring. And David Hood's been out the entire spring. But it'll be interesting to see if Jahad and David Hood won't go either. But it'll be interesting to see what Raquel Armstead has given you because it sounds like he's had a really, really good spring. And same with Jack Gartner. So I'm kind of interested to see whether or not, if Jahad Thomas plays or if he doesn't, I really want to see what Raquel Armstead and Jagger Gardner do. I think that's going to be an interesting storyline.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see Marshall Ehlich because, I mean, his name keeps getting thrown out there over and over and over again. You know, people have asked about him a couple of times. Avery Williams brought him up, I think, last week. I just asked him a general question, like, who's standing out to you on offense? His name keeps coming up. So on one hand, yeah, they've kind of mentioned him in the past, but everybody is just, like, raving about him. And yet, he hasn't caught a pass yet in a game that's counted. I don't think he has a career reception. Of course, Kyle's going to look this up.
No,
I think
you're right. Again, this is something only I'm going to care about. But for a while, they had him having a one catch for -4 yards, and then they took that away. I remember this during my database. So yeah, he's never had a registered catch. We'll go with that.
How did?
Because I noticed, because at one point my statistical database did not match up with their statistical database, and there was always a 4 yard difference.
That's amazing recall. But yeah, he hasn't caught a pass yet. They've always talked about him like looking the part, being in shape, looking good in practice. But and again, we can only see like the last 15-20 minutes of practice. But everybody keeps bringing up his name, and I guess obviously the hope is that they have a deeper receiving core, and you know that Adonis Jennings takes the next step, that Ventel Bryant takes the next step. And then Marshall Ehlich emerges. It just sounds like his basic thing has just been like, I know the offense better now. I'm thinking less, reacting more. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. And if one of the guys that you're really banking on is a guy, I mean, does he go from zero to like, 35, 40 catches in 1 year? It's kind of interesting. I'm also interested to see how Frank Neuthile plays, just to see what he's done with the spring. If PJ Walker were to go down, how ready is he? I mean, he looked good in that one. I guess he had like mop up time at Charlotte. Then he looked good in that series again, Tulane, where he had that touchdown pass. It kind of be interesting to see how much work is after a while. If you've been to the spring game, it gets diluted near the end. They start working in twos and threes and stuff like that. But Those are the things that I think of. Maybe how Nate Harrison looks at corner again. Everybody keeps saying that he's having a good spring. A lot of people have been asking about Kareem Ali. I haven't really, I think people were kind of hoping that he would turn the corner by now, but he's, be interesting.
Good
to
thing
see.
He has 4 months until his redshirt freshman season.
Right. So, people are sometimes fans get impatient with some of those guys, and they want to see if somebody's going to. His name, I think, keeps coming up because there's a vacancy at cornerback. How can it be Nate Harrison that's starting opposite Sean Chandler? But he's had more experience now being switched over that position. Apparently, he's having a really good camp. I don't know. Anybody else you guys can think
of? I also
wanted
to throw out the tight end spot because you won't have Kim Patton. He's been out all spring.
Yep.
And you obviously lose Sal Major, who was a big blocker at tight end last year. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not Colin Thompson maybe catches a few balls or like a Jake Robinson. Robinson, in the time that I've seen practice, it seems like he's made a few plays. So maybe he makes a few plays in the spring game.
Yeah, especially with like Cole Boozer moving to defensive end. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens without Kip Patton there.
With Patton out, are Robinson and Thompson the only scholarship tight ends?
I believe so. Yeah.
I mean, obviously you have a couple coming in the fall, but right now, yeah. Oh, Patrick Anderson.
Who's more like a,
No, he's up 260. He's up 265.
Is he really up to 260? Wow. He's a kid from Aliquippa who was brought in as basically, he was like, the very last addition in that class last year.
He was signing day addition.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't
qualified
yet.
Yeah, that was really kind of like Adam DeMichael's guy from Aliquippa, which is just west of Pittsburgh, somewhere around Pittsburgh, Mike Ditka country.
Right before you get into the tunnel.
Pearl Revis. Those are Aliquippa guys.
Yeah.
Jamie, you're steeped in Pittsburgh knowledge.
Oh, yeah, of course I am.
I just wanted to get you to say something.
I knew Revis, yeah.
Yeah. That'll be an interesting position to watch. I mean, at kicker, Austin has things settled down there. I don't think anybody really is, like, pushing him at that spot.
Transfers back from Wagner.
Is that where he is?
I looked it up yesterday. I think it's Wagner.
And, of course, it's always interesting to see if they really – I would expect the playbook to, again, be pretty vanilla. I think we were talking about this a little bit before we hopped on. We've talked about in the past the coaches generally just seem to be not I don't know if bland is the word, just more discerning in their praise. And we've talked about how Phil Snow doesn't really go out of his way to praise too many people. Matt, you talked to Mike Sravo last week, and he was pretty, mentioned, like, when he came to talk about the linebackers, he mentioned the two walk-ons, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, those were the two names that really came up as guys that were impressive to him.
Yeah. And so, again, I don't know if this is by design. They're usually pretty forthcoming staff, but they don't really seem, I think they the general gist has been, oh, PJ looks good. Some of the veterans look good. We're trying to scale things back for some of the veterans, but the redshirt freshmen aren't tough enough. So, but then again, like you've said in the past, other guys have really flashed because they get excited for the spring game,
right.
But they don't always get the chance to. Well, they get the chance, they just don't always sustain it into preseason camp in August. So, here comes the question. It's gonna.
First of all, Saquon Jefferson's a wide receiver now. He's practicing a wideout. That's what the roster says, at least.
Is that what they have him listed?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's news to me.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I remember, like, maybe 2009, 2010, there was a line, like a walk-on lineman that had a good spring game, and then, like, the fourth quarter of the spring game rolled his knee and I think was out and never played again. I'm trying to remember. He was from Glenside. That's why I remember.
That sounds completely made up.
No. I'll look this up.
I think that's...
Okay, I made it up. I'm just remembering these 2009...
Sounds made up. Again, along the defensive line, we talked about how Hassan Reddick has been pretty vocal.
Stephen Yuan.
Who?
Yuan? Stephen Yuan?
I don't remember him having a standout spring game.
I know, but keep going.
Yeah, all right. I don't know. And then, obviously, maybe at that other tackle spot, Leon Johnson, is Jalen Robinson making a push there? But it sounds like Leon Johnson has that spot locked down. Brandon McGowan's at center. So again, there will be storylines, and I think, next week we'll be talking about, again, who had a breakout game, whether it's somebody you'd expect or if it's somebody who kind of breaks through, and again, whether they'll be able to sustain that into August.
Stephen Yuan moved to defensive tackle in 2011, the Myron Miles year. According to the Philadelphia Inquirer, defenses were not allowed to bring pressure, but defensive lineman Jeff Whittingham and Stephen Yuan both converted offensive linemen, registered sacks nonetheless.
Huh.
So that did happen, and I think he got injured.
Jamie, who you looking forward to seeing? If you're not out running on your bum foot.
I wish I would be running. There's actually a 5K they do on alumni weekend that I've won 2 years in a row now. Don't get to do it this year.
The Temple Alumni 5K?
Yeah, or it's like the...
How did you win that? You're not an alum.
No, it's not it's like the... I don't know if it's the alum...
Have you been illegally entering this race?
No, I wish.
Yeah, because then people wear that shirt on Broad Street Run, right? Then they give like a
Run shirt. It's like it's for like whoever
you won it.
I've won it 2 years. No one runs it. I just usually do it as a run on a Saturday.
What do you get when you win?
I got a water bottle 1 year.
That's good.
And like a medal that I swear to God I might have won in fourth grade, like the same quality type medal. And I was just like, oh, this is cool. And I think I gave it.
You're
to
not very appreciative.
I gave it to a little kid.
Why you won that?
I won it. I wasn't proud of that.
Mom, are you proud of me?
I think I beat some like people that like just showed up. Like they were probably pretty intense. I'm like, I don't really bask in the glory of this race. So when I'm not doing that, I kind of was interested in the running backs, like Matt said earlier. But also just the aspect of who's going to step up as a leader in more of a game situation than what we've seen in practice is probably a big factor for this, because we've already discussed ad nauseum almost the guys going next year to the NFL who have forfeited their leadership position. So who's going to step up to that role this year? I don't think you can really measure that in practice as much as you might see in a game situation when everyone starts flying around.
I guess you see it again, 20-25 minutes we get to see. Hassan Reddick's been outspoken. Avery Williams seems really outspoken, likes to dance on the field, post stuff like that on social media, but he seems to be a real talker. In the back end, Sean Chandler, he's not the most overly vocal guy, at least in interviews, but he's been, more of a leader by example type of guy. I think PJ's established himself. But yeah, again, that'll, I think, the coaches at this point, I feel like by the time the spring game comes around, they'll usually say stuff like, well, we got done what we wanted to get done today. It was fun for the fans. And then they're already thinking of, like, what's going to happen in August. It just seems, I don't want to say more serious in August, but that's when, I guess, position battles really start to get separated. Then you have some of the true freshmen in the mix. And then the coaches, again, like clockwork every year, say, hey, everybody's eligible to compete. We haven't redshirted anybody yet. So, we'll see who, you've got some of the speedy wideouts coming in and stuff like that. Another guy, I think I'll be interested in seeing is, Darian Bryant. See if he does anything. You mentioned, I think you mentioned, one of you guys mentioned Sean Bradley, right? At linebacker?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's an interesting story. Was a late addition to the previous class, gray-shirted. He's put on a little bit of weight. He seems to have, you know, turned some heads at linebacker. So, and I think we've talked about this before. You know, that position in the future, Phil Snow admitted that he wouldn't have recruited, you know, Avery Williams and Stephon Marshall because he looks for a certain size and prototype. But those are still some of the veteran leaders that you need. But again, how will Chappelle Russell, Deshaun Grimes, and those guys, and now maybe a guy like Bradley step up? Do they, obviously they don't have the experience, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, for what it's worth, how they flash in a spring game.
Yeah, so I mean, the spring game's obviously usually a pretty big lightning rod for recruiting, but speaking of recruiting, Temple got a relatively significant
lightning rod for recruiting.
Relatively significant commitment during my what's the phrase?
Absence.
No, when,
suspension.
No,
dismissal.
When like a professor takes a sabbatical.
Sabbatical.
So Matt,
what were you doing?
Matt, why don't you talk to us about
recent commitment? Were you studying
in Kenny Pickett?
The researching third world pyramids.
I was researching Jersey quarterbacks.
And making charts.
Lots of charts.
So, hey. All right.
Well, sorry, Matt.
On the Kenny Pickett now. So Pickett committed on last Saturday. He took a visit and committed on the spot. It was a little bit unexpected for him to commit, I think. He said Matt Rhule was surprised when he committed. It seemed like Pickett was favoring Temple for a while, but I don't think many people were expecting him to get the recruiting process done with it as early as he did. He chose Temple over offers from Buffalo, UConn, Toledo, Monmouth, and Texas State. Also had interest from Rutgers, Boston College, and Wisconsin. Actually went out to Wisconsin and took a visit, so there was some serious interest there. He was mainly recruited by Glenn Thomas. Also had Adam DeMichael recruiting him. Mike Saravo was involved. EJ Barthel as well, the former Rutgers director of recruiting. He actually was like one of the first people to start recruiting him at Rutgers. And when EJ came over to Temple, I think that kind of helped move things along for Kenny. He's going to be a mid-year enrollee. That's his plan. So that's another positive thing for him. Just getting to campus a couple months early, getting a head start. I also asked him because I found it interesting that he committed so early in the process with Anthony Russo already signed. Anthony Russo obviously was a highly recruited kid, a highly recruited prospect. And he basically just said, you know, I'm embracing the competition. And he didn't really seem worried about having Russo on board. And obviously, if you're looking at it from Temple's point of view, that quarterback depth is never a bad thing. You can never have too many solid quarterbacks. And then I just asked him one last thing about his recruitment and his recruiting process, whether or not he plans to take visits or listen to any other schools. And he said, for now, he's 100% committed to Temple and shutting down his recruitment. So yeah, that's what I got from Pickett. It seems like a good get for Temple early in the recruiting process, although I would expect them to probably still go out and recruit other quarterbacks and poke around, see if they can land maybe get a better quarterback. But it's a good start for Temple, a good guy to get in April, and then you'll kind of see how the rest of the recruiting process goes.
Yeah, I think solid's the right word. I mean, not to put too much credence in stars, you know, a three-star quarterback in April before senior year is usually pretty good. I will say he's making the circuit in like the Elite 11 camp. I think he went to one in Florida. He's in D.C. this weekend doing an Elite 11 camp. He did one last year in New York, and the website Quarterback Hit List, QB Hit List, put, like, he was in like the same level as like Russo during that. Out of his class, he was ahead of Tommy DeVito, the Don Bosco prep quarterback that's gotten a lot of Power 5 offers recently. He was ahead of, they ranked him significantly ahead of Jack Cohen, the four-star quarterback that just committed to Wisconsin. So looks like when he's actually given the opportunity to kind of compete at a national stage, he's kind of stepped up. He's also the MVP of the USA Under 17 International Bowl team, which beat up on a team from Quebec, I think. Or
sounds like a real
Ontario.
Ontario. Yeah. They just like crushed him, and he played well in that game. So I mean, it looks like Matt said at this point, it's April 14th right now. It's not a bad thing to have a three-star quarterback.
And it's also interesting. I mean, I think DeAndre Dill maybe committed around this time last year, but they didn't. To have three commits now at this point.
Darian Bryant committed, I think, a year ago yesterday. It was on my hop. It was like a hit. Really? So that was their first. They had one commit, and then Dill committed like the day after, 2 days after.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so they've gotten a pretty good start so far with three commits.
Yeah.
And then we'll have, of course, hopefully by, you know, recording this on Thursday, but before the spring game, we'll hopefully get a list to you of some players who are going to be in attendance on Saturday. And it's usually, I guess, for us as reporters, it's fun to cover the game, not only just to watch what's going on the field, but there are a ton of recruits around. A lot of former players come back. I know they had their, I guess, alumni day was last weekend, I believe, but a lot of former players come back, so it's not a it's not an uncommon thing to see Bernard Pierce back, Muhammad Wilkerson, although I believe he's down in Arizona rehabbing his injury. So we'll have plenty of coverage for you on Saturday. Off the top of my head, I know one of the players that's expected to be there is a player that Temple has offered from Montour High School out by Pittsburgh, Mason Chalewa, who's I believe a two-way lineman, about 6'6", 255 player out there. Temple has recruited at that high school in the past, but hasn't had much luck in sustaining success out there. Tyler Haddock, did Tyler ever get here? Did he ever end up at Temple or no?
He sat with UAB, right? He never made it here. He went to Cal, PA, and now he's with UAB.
And then Matt Barone was here for a little while, an offensive lineman who's now with Duquesne, I think.
Yes, the Dukes.
So interesting to see, you know, who will be here from the Pittsburgh area, because Temple has obviously had a lot of recruiting success in North Jersey, South Jersey, Southeastern PA, and of course have dipped into Florida, dipped into Washington, Colorado. Be interesting to see if they can start building up some success in what has traditionally been, you know, Penn State, Pitt, and Ohio State country. Mentioned earlier the leadership void that's leaving with players like Tyler Matakevich, Matt Ioannidis, Tavon Young, Kyle Friend, Robbie Anderson. So we had a chance to talk to Fran Duffy. He is the video content manager with the Philadelphia Eagles. Fran got his start at Temple, was the video coordinator here. And if you see Fran's work on PhiladelphiaEagles.com, he breaks down a lot of the draft prospects and does some really good work. And he's done stuff on Carson Wentz. So, you know, just basically anybody the Eagles are targeting, second and third day guys. So I had a chance to talk to Fran today about, you know, about those guys, about how he sees things going for Matakevich, Ioannidis, Young, and the draft. Also got into his time here at Temple and offered just some great insight on those guys and what he sees maybe down the line for P.J. Walker and Jahad Thomas and guys like that. So here's our conversation with Fran Duffy. All right, so with us today is Fran Duffy. He's the video content manager with the Philadelphia Eagles. Fran sees a lot of tape, evaluates a lot of players. He's a Temple graduate, spent time with the Temple football program as its video coordinator. Really happy that he's taken some time to talk to us today on The Scoop. Fran, how you doing?
Doing all right, John. I appreciate you having me.
No problem. Thanks for being with us. Well, first of all, why don't you tell our listeners just about, you know, just your time at Temple and your connection to the program and maybe just your view of, you know, how you've seen it progress from where it was before.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had a great time at Temple. I spent almost a quarter of my life there, a third of my life there, actually, really, when I really look at it. I was 7 years it took me to get through school, but spent five of them working full-time for the athletic department in the football program. I started as a student assistant in Al Golden's first spring and, you know, went through most of that season, that 2006 year, as a student assistant. And then he came to me. It was a late October night, and it was, I want to say it was like a Wednesday night to Thursday night. It was 10:30, and, you know, it's dark. All the coaches are still there. And he asked me if I'd, you know, be willing to take on the full-time job as video coordinator at the end of the season. And, of course, I accepted. It was a great opportunity. He had a lot of faith in me. The coaches, the rest of the assistant coaches had a lot of faith in me. And, you know, it was a great, great time. I learned a lot working for that staff. And obviously, you know, Matt Rhule was on that staff, and getting a chance to work with Matt really closely was great. And, you know, just a lot of really fond memories that have helped me really get to where I'm at today in terms of not only just work ethic and what it takes to be like away from the business, but then also just learning about the game, you know, and working with so many coaches and watching so many players come through that really went to high levels of sport. It was just a really great opportunity for me, and memories and times I'll cherish forever.
Is that where, Fran, is that where you caught the bug for really doing a lot of what you're doing today now? Because, you know, the work you do for the Eagles is great. You do a lot of prospect evaluation, and it's not just you know, it's not just the big guys. I feel like, you know, right before we hopped on here, I felt like you were talking about Carson Wentz last year before he really blew up to what he is now. And the work you do with the Eagles is great. And you're not just looking at arm strength. You're really kind of breaking things down in a great way. Did you kind of catch the bug for that when you were doing the video work at Temple and just looking at all those guys and looking at the recruits and everything that kind of came across your desk?
You know, I think that I had the bug a little bit beforehand, but I didn't know. I guess when I arrived at Temple, walked into Ed Bergolson for the first time, I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, I mean, it was I loved the game and what it was all about. You know, just the draft and the team building process, and you know, just really everything about the game of football. And you know, when you get there and you start to watch tape and you start to really see, you know, behind the curtain what goes on, what goes into building a roster, and you know, how do you put different position groups together and what goes on in position meeting rooms, and you know, the dynamic that happens on both sides of the football, it was just so, you know, so eye-opening, you know. And then just dealing with coaches and, you know, seeing how they put a game plan together and, you know, what goes into the thought process and preparing for each opponent, not just on a weekly basis in the fall, but leading up to every month, you know, every month of the year. You know, what are you doing in January? What are you doing in May and June and July? It's just a year-round process that, you know, I really, really gained an appreciation for in the 5-6 years that I spent in Ed Bergolson Hall. And it definitely got me to where I'm at today in terms of, you know, my love for the game, and also just the position I'm at now where, like you said, I'm able to watch film all year round. And, you know, in the fall, I'm focused. Yeah, sure, I'm watching draft guys, but I'm really, you know, also evaluating the Eagles and their opponents each week and trying to produce as much content as possible for Eagles fans to try and ingest and take in and learn more about the game. And because I think a lot of fans now have a thirst for learning more about the game, not just from a story perspective, but also from a technical perspective. You know, I think a lot of fans can sit in the stands at a baseball game and keep score and follow the strategy of the game, and same in basketball, you know, where it's people, you grow up playing the sport, you have an idea of what goes into the strategy and the X's and O's, and it's not as much in football. And so I think fans are starting to gain a little bit more respect for what goes into 11-on-11, you know, full contact football. It's not just guys running into each other. There's so much that goes into it, and it's something that I'm still learning each and every day. Each and every week I try and get better and try and talk to as many people as I can and soak in as much knowledge as possible, but it's a lot of fun, and I love everything I do.
Let's look at, I want to ask you, of course, about the three Temple players who seem to, I guess we can safely say, seem to be a lock to be drafted. And we're talking about Tyler Matakevich, Matt Ioannidis, Tavon Young, and then you got a couple of guys who may be on the fringe that maybe are late round picks or maybe, you know, get signed as rookie free agents, and Kyle Friend, Robbie Anderson. Again, I know with your ties to Temple, you've seen these guys play and probably had a chance to evaluate them. And, you know, Temple fans are anxious to know where these guys are going to go in the draft if guys like Kyle Friend and Robbie Anderson get drafted. If we were to maybe start with Tavon and Tyler and Matt Ioannidis, where do you see those guys going? And just as a follow-up to that, too, does it kind of fit into the philosophy that Temple has had? Because all these guys that we're talking about, none of them were highly regarded recruits. I mean, we run a site in the Yahoo and Rivals Network, and none of these were 4 or 5 star guys. And it seems like some of the 4 star guys that Temple has had haven't always worked out. And now here are the guys that are probably going to get into the NFL again, you know, like a Steve Mannary, you know, like Bernard Pierce, or these guys that weren't as highly recruited and now they're NFL prospects. So I'm just kind of curious as to what you think of these guys, where you think they could be drafted, and how you've seen them progress.
Well, it's funny that you bring up that last point, because honestly, when I was at Temple, you mentioned Steve Mannary and Bernard Pierce. Bernard Pierce, I think the only other team that was in on him was Buffalo. You know, Mannary had lacrosse offers, but he didn't really have much else going on in terms of D1 football. Mm-hmm. You know, Muhammad Wilkerson was little known. He was athletic and he was a basketball player, but his recruitment didn't pick up until he went to prep school. And then, you know, you saw Rutgers and Marshall try and jump in, and thankfully he stayed. Jaquan Jarrett had nothing coming out of Brooklyn. So, and obviously he went on to be a 4-year starter and an NFL player, a second round pick. So a lot of the players that came out of Temple when I was there, they were all very unheralded recruits and really, you know, were self-made and really helped to improve. And I thought that Al Golden and his staff did such a great job of developing those type of players. And you see that Matt is doing the same thing now with the football team in terms of guys like Tyler Matakevich and Tavon Young, and a little bit unheralded. But, and you mentioned that some of the big recruits that we got, you know, that didn't always work out. And there's no need to name names, but there were lots of guys that came in with, you know, 3-4-star pedigrees and had offers from huge schools, and they chose Temple, which is great. But you want to be able to see them fulfill that promise, fulfill that upside, and reach that potential. But as far as the guys coming out this year, I mean, it's a really interesting group because there's a lot of depth in that class coming from Temple and the senior group. No, the only thing is that each of those prospects, I think, has a little one dark cloud that's kind of hanging over them. You know, and I think you start with Matakevich, and obviously, I mean, he's just super productive, one of the most productive players in the history of college football. You know, great instincts, great tackler, as tough as can be. Was a 3-year captain. I mean, everything you want off the field, Tyler Matakevich brings. The problem is that he's a little bit undersized, and not just in terms of height and weight, but also arm length. And that's a big deal at the NFL, because if you're going to get stuck on blocks, you want guys that have the arm length to be able to keep offensive linemen at bay and then shed and find the football. He's got shorter arms, and his foot speed's just not great. And, you know, and so it's tough to be both undersized and not athletic. And that's typically not a good combination. So, you know, I remember I talked to him at his pro day, and he said he's been fighting that stigma his whole life, that he's undersized, you know, that he's small and slow. So he's just going to continue to do that at the next level. And I think that the good thing is there's a lot of guys in this class that are the same way. Scooby Wright from Arizona, you know, won every award that a defensive player can win under the sun back in 2014 before he got hurt this past season. He declared for the draft. Very similar situation. You know, he's small and slow. I think Matakevich will, you know, has the ability to fight with guys like that. He'll be a third day pick. It'll just be a matter of, you know, do teams prefer Scooby Wright? Do they prefer Tyler Matakevich or, you know, Nick Vigil or Antonio Morrison or any of these other guys? These day three linebackers will be an interesting group. But, you know, Matakevich had such a great career in North Broad Street, and I'm really, really happy to see him succeed. You know, you get to Tavon Young. I think the big issue with him is just his size, you know, because athletically, he's got everything you want. And he didn't get a lot of buzz coming into the season. Everybody knew about Tyler Matakevich, and people were talking about Matt Ioannidis and Hershey Walt up front, but no one was really talking too much about Tavon Young from an NFL draft perspective. And then, you know, you go, I was there at the Temple Penn State game week 1, and you just see him, you see him run around in the backfield, and a guy that's got great quickness. He's got the ability to play man coverage. He's tough too. I remember I was at the Memphis game. He made a couple really nice tackles near the line of scrimmage, one on a screen play that I can remember vividly. You know, he's got the ability to come downhill. I think a lot of people project him to the slot for that reason, because he's quick, but he's also physical. He's got that tenacity you look for inside. So Tavon Young, you know, if he were 2 inches taller, you'd be talking about him as a potential second or third round pick. But, you know, since he's under 5'9", I think you're going to see him go day three. It'll just be a matter of how late. But I really, really like Tavon Young. And then lastly, with Ioannidis, and honestly, I think Ioannidis has the chance to go earlier than the other two.
I agree, yeah.
Really disruptive. You know, you see the burst, you see the athleticism. Another guy who's a multi-year captain. And a great, great kid. I talked to all three of these guys down at the Senior Bowl, but I had a really long conversation with Matt down in Mobile when I was down there. And, you know, just a great kid to be around. And again, you're talking about a guy who knows how to use his hand, knows how to find the football sideline to sideline, has that athleticism. The only thing with Matt is that it's a really, really strong defensive tackle class. So, you know, in any other year, you're talking about Ioannidis as a certainty for day two. But I think in this class where you have so many talented players, you mean, there's a chance that 7, 8, 9 defensive tackles could hear their name called on round one. I don't think it's going to happen. I think you're going to see some of those guys bump down the board a little bit, and that's going to bump the rest of the players in that class down. So ultimately, I think Ioannidis is going to fit in really well for a 4-3 team as a three technique. It'll just be a matter of how early will he come off the board, and I think all three of those guys will hear their names called. And I think Robbie Anderson's got a good shot too, John, because, you know, when you watch him, and I actually knew I was there when he was being evaluated to arrive at Temple, and a really, really impressive kid because of his height and his movement. You know, he's got good speed. He showed that at his pro day.
Yeah.
And he showed that down at the East-West Shrine game too. I thought he was one of the best receivers in attendance down there in St. Petersburg, caught everything thrown his way all week long. The only thing with Robbie that you have to worry about, obviously he had the year away from the game in 2014, and then also just his size. He's got really good height, but in terms of his frame, he's got a really skinny arms, really skinny waist. A lot of people are worried how much weight can he put on. Some people are talking about him as a potential corner prospect, and so that's really where it kind of gets cloudy a little bit for Robbie. But you know, you watch him against William Jackson, the corner from Houston, in the AAC title game. He worked that kid, and people are talking about Jackson as a first round talent. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily see it that way, but you know, people are talking about Jackson sometime in mid round one. Robbie Anderson got the best of him multiple occasions in that game. So a guy that certainly has the ability to play receiver at the next level. We've seen a lot in recent years. A lot of teams are looking for size at corner and athletic ability at corner. Some people could project Robbie to the defensive side of the football for that reason. So I'll be really interested to see how that develops. And then you mentioned Kyle Friend, a guy that tore up the pro day in terms of the weight room numbers, has always been known as a really durable, strong kid inside at the pivot, shows the ability to move people at the point of attack in the run game, really solid inside in pass protection as well. So I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him go late. The only thing with him, much like Ioannidis, it's a really good group of interior offensive linemen in this draft class. There's a lot of guys, a lot of really good depth in the mid to late round. So Kyle will have a lot of competition there on the back end of the draft.
Fran, what you mentioned, Kyle Friend, you know, a couple of years ago, for whatever it was worth, a lot of people were saying, like, wow, he might be the first guy to get drafted. And then there was, you know, when Temple played at Notre Dame a few years ago, he really held his own against Lewis Nix. And obviously Lewis Nix's career hasn't really worked out like some people thought it would. But I think the next day Lewis Nix was tweeting, he had a tweet that said something like, double team life really is tough, except he wasn't really being double teamed that much in that game, and it was mostly Kyle kind of handling him at the point of attack. And then, you know, Kyle got hurt this year, didn't have the year that he wanted. Did the kind of bad luck and unevenness of his senior year set him back at all, or when people evaluate him, do they just see what they've seen in the past few years, you think, in terms of the strength and the bench press numbers and stuff like that? And also, does his is center a position where he can get away with being a little shorter?
Yeah, he could definitely get away with being a little bit shorter inside. Now, that's going to be the issue, though, Don, is that when you get to guard, that'll hurt him a little bit.
Shorter,
some people may not want a guy with the shorter arms. And if you can only play center, you need to be able to start in the NFL, because teams, you can only carry so many offensive linemen, especially on game day. Teams really only keep 7 or 8 active. So you want a guy on the back end of your roster that can be versatile and play a number of positions. So that'll be the one thing, too, that hurts Kyle is his size. But you mentioned the injury against Notre Dame this year and how that really set him back. It's a shame, because otherwise, I mean, he started every game that he played in. The kid was really, really durable. You know, I think the teams know what you're getting in Kyle Friend, and a guy that, again, is just physically tough. He's competitively tough, knows when to turn up the heat on a defensive lineman, but also knows when to be patient and let the action come to him. Again, shows the ability to be a solid pass protector as well as a good run blocker, plays with good technique, tight hand, and a good base. I mean, he's a guy that's really, really impressive in a lot of different ways. The athleticism, the size, the injury you mentioned, a lot of the reasons why you're going to see him bump down a little bit.
Hey, one last question for you. I don't know how much time you get to see them. I know you're still a fan of the program. When you look at the current roster and the guys that are coming back, and it's, you know, probably tough to answer this question because you got another season coming up, but anybody that you see on the roster that you see and you say that guy's a future pro, I don't know how much you've been looking at the redshirt freshmen, the sophomores, the recruiting class, anything like that. Anybody that you see on the roster right now, or anybody that we haven't talked about where you say, hey, don't forget about this guy. This guy could be playing on Sundays in the future.
Well, Jahad Thomas certainly had a lot of exciting plays last year. And you know, there were some rumors, you know, late in the year
that he was maybe going to come out.
Think about coming out, but honestly, I'm glad that he didn't. I'm glad that he went back to school. Now it's going to be a great running back class next year, and everybody knows that with guys like Leonard Fournette and Nick Chubb and the like, and Dalvin Cook. But Jahad Thomas coming back, he's got a chance to be one of the top seniors at the position, and that can go a long way because you know, you go down to the Senior Bowl and you stand out. That's running back is a good position to be at the Senior Bowl, because typically a lot of the top prospects of the position are juniors. So you have an ability to kind of set yourself apart from the rest of the pack by going down there in Mobile. So, hopefully Jahad takes advantage of that opportunity if that does come to him next year. A lot of really interesting players, honestly, John. You look at the safety spot, wide receiver, and a lot of young guys that can run. I know that some of the younger guys have gotten a lot of buzz so far this spring. Excited to see how they look Saturday in the spring game. But, I'm excited about P.J. Walker going into his senior season. Hopefully he can continue to improve if he can take the next step. A little bit undersized, but certainly has a lot of the traits that teams are looking for now. But Jihad, I would say, is probably the player that I'm most excited about going into 2016.
Did they have to – okay, I'm lying here. I said that was my last question, but I got to follow up because I know you know this roster really well. One follow-up about PJ and one follow-up about Jihad. Where Jihad's concerned, you saw him wear down a little bit just because of the carries that he got, and they'll have Marquell Armstead hopefully getting more carries, Jagger Gardner getting more carries. Is that something that he has to kind of – fight through as a senior to cut down on a couple of those late season fumbles and stuff like that? Or again, when he's being evaluated, do the NFL teams say, all right, well, okay, if this kid gets drafted and he's playing on Sundays in the future, well, he's not going to be getting the ball 22, 25, 28 times a game?
Definitely. I think that last point is spot on with him. I think looking at Jihad Thomas and just his build, you know, I don't know that a team's going to look at him and say, you know what, he's going to be a guy that we're going to be – he's going to be a featured part of our offense, and we're going to give the ball 22, 25 times a game. I think he's going to be more of a change-of-pace style back. But you saw the vision and the lateral agility. I mean, some of those runs against Penn State, against Notre Dame, against really some of the best opponents on the schedule were awesome. You know, in Connecticut, he had a couple of big – I mean, there were some really, really impressive runs last year. I haven't put time into studying him, but just watching him being in attendance at some of those games, I mean, you really saw the movement skills from Thomas. So I think that's the thing that's going to really, really help him moving forward into his senior year.
Yeah, and then with P.J. Walker, you know, again, fans are always fixated on the quarterback position. They saw the improvement from a sophomore year to junior year, probably being coached by Glenn Thomas helped. He cut down on his interceptions, and now I think the thought this year is he's got to move from I don't want to call him a game manager because I think he was more of that this past season than people give him credit for. But now I think people want to see him really start to carry things a little bit more. Is size going to be a knock on him, or does that kind of – I mean, do you have to be as good as Russell Wilson to play that small in the NFL? Is there a spot – or will he start getting questions about, okay, he's really good, he's athletic, but he may have to play another position? Have you heard anything just about how NFL people are seeing P.J. Walker at the next level?
You know, I haven't heard anything in terms of how the NFL views him at this point, but when you watch PJ, I mean, I think the size will definitely be an issue. The thing that he's got to prove that he can do is play from the pocket, because you have to be able to do that to play and to be an effective quarterback at the next level. He's shown flashes of it throughout his whole career. You know, going back to his freshman season, he showed the ability to make throws from the pocket and operate with bodies around him, but it's got to be consistent, and that's going to be the big thing moving forward this year. There were some throws where, you know, I could think of that Houston game. You know, you go back, there were some plays where he drops back and his feet are all over the place. He's not calm. He's got to be more patient in terms of working in the pocket and dealing with pressure, dealing with defenders around him. Even when it's not pressure, the feeling of pressure. You don't want him to constantly be, going nuts with his feet. And that'll be the big thing that he'll need to work on. Because you think to Marshall a couple years ago. I mean, they were undefeated. What do they have, like one loss in 2 years? Raheem Cato was, you know, all everything. Didn't get drafted, didn't get a sniff in the NFL. It takes more than numbers. It takes more than, you know, athleticism. You've got to be able to win from the pocket. And especially if you're going to be undersized. That's why Russell Wilson has been able to get by this well, because, you know, he's shown the ability to win from the pocket. And he's done it really in an improved rate each year in the league. So that'll be the one big thing that PJ will have to focus on moving forward.
Fran, terrific stuff. Very, very much appreciate it. Hopefully, you getting over to the Cherry and White game on Saturday?
I'm hoping to, man. I tell you, it'll be we're in crunch time now, getting ready for the draft. But hopefully, get over there to check out the game.
All right. Well, hopefully, we'll see you over there. Thanks again so much. Again, Fran Duffy, the video content manager for the Philadelphia Eagles. Check out his work there. Does terrific, terrific work. Especially if you're a draft Nick and looking forward to what's coming up at the end of the month. Evaluates a ton of prospects and does great, thorough work. Again, very much appreciate having you on. Hopefully, we'll talk to you down the line, buddy.
Absolutely. Thanks, John. I appreciate it again.
Thanks, Fran.
All right, so again, we'll have plenty more to talk about next week after the spring game, stuff to look for heading into preseason camp in August. Things have been relatively quiet on the basketball front. Still two open scholarships. Temple's still one of the schools recruiting Chekhmet Dembele, who has a Syracuse offer now, apparently still interested in bringing in James Palmer for a visit as a transfer. Other than that, I know we keep getting questions about it, but not much moving on the basketball recruiting front. With that, Jamie.
The mail time. All right, guys, so it's time for the mailbag. I'm excited. Don't let John fool you. I actually am genuinely excited for the mailbag because we still don't. This might be one of my last mailbags, second to last mailbag. Who knows? So you got to get excited whenever you can at this point. So,
it might be your last mailbag.
Thanks, Kyle.
So, a vaudeville act where he like threatens you. It's like, oh, give it up. This will be your last act.
That was good.
I'll shut up. I'm sorry.
So we'll kick it off with. The Xmas City Owl. Is that Christmas City Owl or just Xmas City Owl?
I mean, I think it denotes Christmas, but Christmas it's literally written as Xmas City Owl.
I appreciate
we'll just
it.
Call it Christmas City Owl.
Where can we contribute to the purchase of a windscreen for your microphones? we could start a GoFundMe. I think that's an attainable goal.
They included a link on the message board, I think, to some sort of, I don't know, not maybe it wasn't a GoFundMe, but he is referring in a funny way to the fact that a lot of our interviews that we have to do during spring practice or outside, and you can maybe hear like 25%.
Although when I was there on Tuesday, all the interviews were inside. I don't know if anybody noticed, but appreciate that. Next week,
Matt laid down the law.
Yeah,
Matt it was pouring rain. The weather was terrible.
So. Matt pulled aside Richburg and was like, "We're either going to do this inside on my terms, or we're not going to do it at all." And then Richburg just cowered.
Really throwing your weight around, Matt.
Rich, if you're listening, that didn't happen.
Rich's new goatee and his flavor saver did not intimidate.
Jesus Christ!
Did not intimidate Matt enough. Sorry, Rich. Rich
Keep
is a good
going.
Guy.
All
right, Rich has a goatee now. Anyway,
I'll kick it off. Next one. It's part one of Pat Egan's question.
Percy Harvin's retiring.
Not a surprise. After the successful season, are you and the staff seeing a buy-in from recruits? Is it hard to sell that this was a lucky season? Obviously, speaking about the football team in reference to last year.
I don't know if it's hard, because it's not like they came from a one-win season to a 10-win season. It's the first time they've had success in the last 15 years. But I think it's definitely something that if I'm recruiting a different school, if I'm a Virginia or a Maryland or something like that, yeah, I think you probably make that claim, right? Hey, Temple can never sustain that. That was a fluke. They graduated all their players. But they got a lot of talent coming back. I mean, and so far, if there's been any indication, recruiting hasn't taken a step back yet. Look, if anything, they're at a better pace than they were last year. So I think it's definitely something they have to keep in mind. They have to recruit against that notion, but I don't think it's necessarily hard.
Well, yeah, and you got Karamo Diabate on signing day in February right. after they had ended the season on a sour note, yeah. After you lose to Houston and after you play poorly against Toledo in the bowl game.
They got, I think, 7-8 3-stars after the season ended. They got a lot of their players.
Yeah, you got Benny Walls over Rutgers and Boston.
Yeah, Benny Walls was essentially committed for however long. Like, Benny Walls was one of those guys you're like, yeah, you're coming to Temple. Like, him like Amir Tyler, you're like, yeah, you're coming to Temple. Like, let's just stop pretending you're not coming to Temple.
And then there's a second part to Pat Egan's question. You want to read it? You want me to read it?
I'm
you
trying
want
to
Kyle
dig it
to read
up.
It? I got it right here.
I'll read it.
Let Kyle read it. Kyle's back. Refer to himself in the third person.
Pat Egan. And first of all, he wrote this in the
notes.
As if he committed.
He wrote this long thing in the notes app. You wake up from a coma and you realize the world has been overtaken by a zombie outbreak. Three people are in the hospital and have survived. One is an ice cream truck owner with a 2x4 full of nails, three Deer Park waters, a Twinkie,
he wrote
and a
Deer Park as in D E N R.
Deer Park.
Deer Park.
It's been
How
so
are
long
you?
Since we've spoken. a portable DVD player. One is a mother of two, wearing Skechers, good shoes, holding a pitchfork. She has a backpack. I assume backpack.
A backup.
Backpack full of stuff, but she's reluctant to share. And the last is a man in a clown costume with a ball of spice connected to a chain, I believe that's called a mace, that he found at an abandoned medieval times. He misspelled medieval. It's underlined in red, Pat. You could have just clicked it and it would have told you how to spell medieval. He speaks little English, but he's got an RV and the full season, I assume he means series, full series of Pretty Little Liars on DVD. Who are you going with? No question mark.
This is so much I'm taking.
I got a couple takeaways from this. One is, what is wrong with you, Pat? Two is,
I love the
insanity. These people are in a hospital, right? So you're assuming that they're patients as well? Like, you wake up from a coma. Are they patients in the hospital, or have they just kind of come and, like, taken over the hospital and this is their base now? Assuming they're patients, why does the one have a 2x4 full of nails? Why is the other one holding a pitchfork, and why does the other one have a mace? There's a lot of weapons for a hospital. Hospitals usually don't allow them.
It's the end of the world.
Second, one person has a portable DVD player. Other person has the DVD. So am I to assume the person with the DVD player does not have any DVDs?
No. So they just have the DVD player. But so if you stumble across them in your time across
the it'd be easier to find DVDs than to find a portable DVD player, right?
Agreed, absolutely.
Yeah. Mike, before we offer our formal answers on this, do you think Pat is just at 97.5 and he's like supposed to be producing and he just zones out and just thinks of this stuff?
I'll say the note was at 3:51, which was before I think I prodded him for a question. So he clearly had this, he was just sitting there typing this out.
Is he working on Missinelli's show? I don't think he is. So maybe he's got time. Still, wow. This is probably his deepest, darkest, most varied.
Here's another thing. He paints this picture as if it's a resource-driven thing. Hey, who's going to help you best survive?
But all of his questions are very resource-driven.
But these are
it's
people,
like, what do you do?
Too.
Wasn't the Jersey Devil was involved?
These are
in one of them,
right? These are people as well. So you're assuming, who am I going to try to live out the zombie apocalypse with?
He's way too nice.
Clown? I'm not a big clown guy, right? I think the clown's out for me. So it's down to mother of two. Does she have the two kids with her? I'm assuming no. So she's a grieving mother of two. And an ice cream truck owner. That's useless to me now. All right? You don't have the ice cream truck with you. You don't know how to make ice cream with your bare hands. You get powder and you add milk to it. I'm going to go mother of two. I feel like she's a nurturer.
I like that. The nurturer
is a
big
nurturer.
Aspect.
She's a mother of two, so she's probably used to dealing with small crises, but hopefully we can get her to deal with big crises. And
that's a big step up, is dealing with a zombie.
And
apocalypse.
I think over time, since I'm a very nurturable person, she'll want to nurture me, I'll get access to that backpack full of stuff that she's reluctant to share. So I'm going with mother of two.
For all your reasoning, I agree with you. Not even kidding. I kind of think that's a good process.
Matt?
It might sound kind of lame, but I agree with Kyle too. I didn't think it through as hard as he did, but
none of us do. I think
first of all, don't act like I was sitting in the office doing this. This is all from the hip stuff.
Oh yeah,
You talk until you come to a conclusion.
The Kyle Gauss story.
I talk until I come to a conclusion.
The Kyle Gauss story.
So that's what I do in papers. So
you ramble, and then eventually something coherent comes out.
Then you're good. Then you stumble your way into a B and you graduate.
Yeah.
That I've been doing.
In 8 days for Jamie.
Yeah,
Jamie, so. You took both of my classes at Temple.
I did.
And that's how he would describe all the papers he wrote for
you. Jamie, I'm very critical of your writing, but you didn't make any points in here. You kind of just stumble. At what point you mentioned you're a runner in a story about the football team?
They run.
I'm going with, as much as I'd be freaked out by the guy in the clown costume, I'm going the man in the clown costume for a few reasons.
He's got an RV,
which means we're mobile. We can go places. If the zombies are attacking us, we just run them over because we're
in an
RV. We can hide in the bathroom. We can sleep. An RV has a couple of beds. So we got that going for us. I'm excited that we have a mace. I mean, how many mace references?
How useful is a mace?
Unless you're talking late 90s rap, how many times do you like make mace
references?
What
kind of zombies are they?
I don't know. He didn't specify.
No,
we can make them as weak or as strong as they need to be.
Because you have like the...
Like
I Am Legend ones, then you have like the Walking Dead, just like the.
Well, I Am Legend ones are basically like vampires, right?
Yeah, like they're nuts. Yeah.
The best thing about Pat's questions is I go back and reread them, and I just saw this. He speaks little English, so maybe that's a little bit of a roadblock for me.
I don't know what language.
If it's German, I took a lot of German in high school and college. If it's Spanish, I'm screwed.
Why is the little English thing a bad thing? You're assuming he also speaks fluent in another language. You guys can teach each other the language. There's enough of a bridge there.
Again, to review, excited about the RV. I'm also very excited. I think this is a very underplayed thing.
Pretty
you
Little
guys
Liars.
I'm excited to see Pretty Little Liars. Have not seen it.
Who's A? I don't know. That's the only thing I know about Pretty Little Liars.
I don't know anything about Pretty Little Liars. It's just an opportunity. It's an opportunity for me to learn. As you know, I don't watch.
They killed somebody and they're trying to cover up a murder.
I don't watch any shows other than Shameless.
Watch The Blacklist. Blacklist is good.
I'll get to it. And he found this mace in an abandoned medieval times, which means that he knows where this abandoned medieval times is. Which means
but that also means that the mace is not lethal. They're not using real maces.
I don't care if the thing's lethal or not. We have an RV. We can run over people. At that abandoned medieval times, there might be leftover food there. If you've ever been to medieval times,
it doesn't mean like he has
lots of
to the
chicken,
time.
Lots they of like fruit drinks. Though. They yeah. will not have someone seen cable guy.
There was no utensils.
Love it.
In the medieval
I've been
time.
To medieval times.
So yeah. Like, which one did you go to? North Jersey?
I went on a school trip.
Yeah. Went for a school trip.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I went for.
Which team you were given? Aren't you given like a night? You're giving like a color, right?
Sounds a lot like just.
I'm for my wife's goddaughter's birthday party, and it's just like moderately cooked chicken and like high C, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty
but
much.
Doesn't
some
sound
stuff
like a bad
we
Saturday
could
to me.
Some stuff where we could sustain life. So I'm going with the non-English speaking clown in the RV. Yeah. Who's got the full season?
Well, you enjoy trying to break down the language barrier. Well, I have the mother of two cleaning up after me, making me home cooked meals. Nurturing me, assuming that backpack has some type of weapon, we're good.
How do you know she's a good mother of two?
That's a good point.
You just assume that she's nurturing. Have you heard from the kids?
She's wearing Skechers, all right? So she's clearly like...
Mom status.
Mom. She's clearly like a suburban
She's
mom.
So nurturing, she's holding a pitchfork.
Well, yeah,
the zombie apocalypse.
Well, the zombie apocalypse takes its toll on everybody.
Maybe that pitchfork is meant for thee.
She's reluctant to share. That means that she's been burnt before. She was too willing to share before. Somebody took advantage of that. And now that she's kind of pulled herself up by her bootstraps, she's a little hesitant to let anybody into her life. I will break down that wall.
Most insane conversation I've ever had.
All right,
Jamie, you going? Can you just go with the ice cream truck owner just for the hell of it?
No,
you took my side.
Yeah, I did. I mean, notice I'd like to think that I could survive a lot of situations on my own.
One last point I'm going to bring up. You wake up from a coma. What do we know? What do we remember?
You remember everything up to that moment. It's very Walking Dead-ish. He gets in a coma in the beginning. He wakes up. Monday.
Never watched The Walking Dead.
Who here can tell that John DeCarlo's never seen Walking
That's
Dead?
That's the first episode of Walking Dead. He's a cop. He gets shot. He goes into a coma. He wakes up a month into the zombie apocalypse. In a hospital.
Cool.
Pat, I've said this millions of times before. You continue to outdo yourself. Well done, my friend.
That's
Thank you.
And the last one we got is from Jeff McDev. Tell me your best wardrobe malfunction story.
Before we even get to that, I will give Jeff a lot of credit in that his ordering pizza to the Sunoco Snapchat story was the best use of Snapchat I've ever seen. It's so good.
Yeah, it
was like 40 different snaps. It's him walking. He lives in like the graduate hospital-ish area. Him walking to the Sunoco, which I know well, at right around like Broad and...
Which one is it?
It's the one my granny brought in like Catherine. It's right near that Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, okay.
From,
yeah.
Popeyes.
He's obsessed with the Sunoco.
So he walks to that, and like he's amping it up. Like, we're changing the game, doing all these things. I'm like, what is he going to do? Like, is there's like Gatorade deal thing? And he's like, whoa, he's yelling at the Sunoco. He comes back out, and he's like, here we go, we changed the game. And the next thing's him with this Domino's driver. He ordered pizza to Sunoco, lied to the Domino's people, and claimed that his car broke down to Sunoco, and please just do me this favor, and please deliver this pizza to Sunoco. And it's just him. It's fantastic. I was cracking up.
I'm
like
in his
40,
group chat with
snaps.
Like six guys like texting me. He's like, check out McDevitt's Snapchat. It's the best stuff I've ever seen. Lots of little goats. Greatest of all time.
It was great. That was
very, very good. I also enjoyed him like busting back into his apartment. And he's like expecting to like rejoice. There's the cat.
He's like, yeah, I'm gonna eat pizza with all my boys. And he opens up the living room's empty. It's just a cat. It's good. Great Snapchat, Jeff.
So go ahead and tell us your best wardrobe malfunction story.
I don't know if my best wardrobe malfunction story is podcast appropriate. We'll have to come back to me. I'll think if I have a more PG.
You gotta talk your way through this.
Best wardrobe malfunction story. Jamie, we'll start with you.
I don't know. I think I really have one. I have one like that I'm not involved in. But like, we were going to a party during high school, and my buddy sits down, and he's wearing like a new pair of pants. He's like, oh man, I'm so pumped to go to this party. Sits down on my friend's bed, sits back, and just a straight rip goes down the thighs. And it's just one of the funniest things ever. He had to wear basketball shorts in the middle of February to go to a party.
I'll say I've had multiple ones that, you know, you would assume happened. Like an incident happens, you know, clothes are no longer valid. I've had multiple like that. The one that I'll say is PG is when I was in middle school. This must have been like sixth grade.
Oh, God. This is when you're living in Indiana?
No, I went to Lionville Middle School. I was in Lionville. sixth grade. So this was like two. This was. It might have been seventh grade. So this is the year after they go to the NBA Finals. The year after Iverson takes them to the NBA Finals. For Christmas, I got gifted NBA practice rip-off pants. And I wore them like they were regular pants.
Like, I did that for a while, too.
I wore, like, just, like, I'm, like, an 11-year-old kid. I'm wearing, like, presumably tidy whiteies or something. And I have NBA rip-off pants. And I would say probably, like, twice a week, I'd, like, bend over in middle school or something to get something in here. Pop, 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 pop. You would just hear them, like, unsnap. And then you just get, like, exposed tidy whiteies. You get lifted back up. You tight. You snap. So that was a pretty big part of my middle school experience.
I can get
great pants.
Matt's
great
pants. Got one.
Oh, of course.
It actually happened pretty recently, but I there had you go. My pants ripped too. I was walking into my car actually from going to see, this was recently, like two, 3 weeks ago, when I was going to the Donna Frio Classic to see Kenny Uboah play. And I got back
on the job with Al Scoop and his pants ripped.
Yeah, they ripped, and luckily it was after the game, so it didn't really matter that much. I had to walk into my dorm with ripped pants.
Otherwise, you'd never be able to look Kenny Uboah in the eye again.
Yeah, exactly.
Gosh. One I can think of, this had to have been like 7 or 8 years ago.
The Woods and Manioc?
No. No. That's not podcast appropriate either. I was living in Manioc at the time, got on the train, the R6, as it were. Now it's called the whatever, the Manioc, whatever the hell it's called.
On out there.
Get on the train. Notice that like a couple people are staring at me. I think like, oh, Philadelphia is just being nice. Get off at the train station, walk to my office, and the whole time I'm thinking like, it is really like just pleasant today. I feel good. I feel like my air is circulating. I feel like just very comfortable, too comfortable to be dressed in business casual clothes. Get into my office. Someone who works me is like, your fly's down.
Oh.
I had been like getting a solid breeze through my pants the whole time, and that's why people have been looking at me on the train.
Like a pep in your stomach. You're like,
what a day. Speaking in a British accent, it's just a jolly good day out there. There's a bit of a breeze in my.
I got his smile and swinging arms like this right here.
Bit of a breeze in my shorts. That's probably a tame one. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a good way to wrap it up.
Yep. And we worked in Jeff McDevitt's Snapchat store.
Oh, yeah. So we hit the bases today, I'd say.
Blake Lively's pregnant.
Okay, well. We're not breaking any more editors on here today, Kyle.
At least three or four times has shown us that just blatantly not paying attention.
Yeah, I agree.
It's going to be an attractive baby, Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively.
Well, it does not need to be. It's not podcast discussion worthy.
They have a 16-month-old daughter they named James.
I don't know. Okay, well, I wasn't expecting this. I don't.
Yeah, we can totally react to this
next week if we remember.
Maybe we'll get a mailbag question about that next week if it's such a hot button topic.
Gossip Girl.
But next week we'll talk some more spring football for you guys. We'll recap Cherry and White game. Hopefully, I'll be walking by then out of this boot, and Kyle will be back again.
I will tell you as a medical professional, I really don't think you should be running Broad Street.
I don't care.
A medical professional.
Call it what you want. But that about wraps it up for us, guys, and we'll talk to you guys next week. We'll be right back.